I try not to overtax my day. I try not to put too many things on my to-do list. I work very hard to look at my day now and go, you know what? You got a lot done. Find a way to just be okay with that and just stop working, sit down and relax.
Welcome to the Secret Life Podcast. Tell me your secret. I'll tell you mine. Sometimes you have to go through the darkness to reach the light. That's what I did. After 12 years of recovery in sex and love addiction, I finally found my soulmate, myself. Please join me in my novel, Secret Life of a Hollywood Sex and Love Addict, a 4-time bestseller on Amazon. It's a brutal, honest, raw, gnarly ride, but hilarious at the same time. Check it out now on Amazon. Welcome to Secret Life Podcast. I'm Breanne Davis-Gant. Today, I'm pulling back the curtains of all kinds of human secrets. You know, those deep, dark secrets we probably want to go to our grave with? Or those lighter, funnier secrets that are just plain embarrassing? Really, the how, what, when, where, and why of it all. So today, my guest is Kevin. Kevin, I have a question for you. Dun, dun, dun. What is your secret?
My secret is the fact that I have had my entire, well, as far back as I can remember, I have had a severe perfectionism complex. Severe.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm so excited because I feel like I'm a recovering perfectionist sometimes. So when was this secret created? Do you remember how far back?
Well, if it's not an incident in our lives, I think that the kind of thing that I'm discussing obviously comes from wiring. And I was a psychology double major. So this clearly occurred in my childhood. And it is directly related. I grew up in a one parent home. I didn't have a father. I had a sister and my mother was gone a lot. But, my mother is kind of a malignant narcissist.
What is a malignant narcissist? Can you explain that to the listeners?
Somebody basically who, no matter what the situation is, it is always about them. No matter who else it's happening to, you could be telling someone a story about you almost dying and they would find a way to make the conversation about themselves and have that almost happen to them once. And also one of the things about a malignant narcissist is, I've actually never heard in my entire life my mother ever say, I'm sorry or I'm wrong.
Things are like running so true for me. I've also experienced someone in my life like that, where I could literally say the sky is blue and they would go to their grave saying the sky was green. Like you could not get them to admit they are wrong. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. And again, sometimes it sounds extraordinarily malicious or it sounds, this is something that happens very unconsciously. This is a set of wiring. And it took me to my early 30s to start really realizing that because of that, that I had adopted not only a perfectionism complex to the degree that it really was disabling my life in certain ways, even though I was highly productive. Certainly your husband would attest to that, at how productive I was with this complex. But also that you don't come to the realization of how much you are beginning to adopt those traits. And when it came clear to me, I was like, oh no, this is not good.
Like your traits of being a perfectionist almost made you become a narcissist. Is that what you're saying?
You begin to, because you work so hard to be perfect, it can appear to others that you think you are.
Wow. Okay. So your mother, you think because your mother was like that and these wiring started happening. What do you remember when you recall back moments where you were kind of different?
Well, ironically, the irony in what I just said and the fact that I'm sitting here with you, Brandon, which is one of the reasons why I reached out to you, is I began to become very, cognitive of this literally around the time I met your husband. This goes back to me at a time right around that same year or year and a half. And what I realized was that I was not trying to become the jack of all trades and the master of none, despite the fact that I chose, first of all, golf early on in terms of a career and then this in the performer profession. But I realized that it was causing me to believe that I was required to learn everything and do everything that touched my life. And when you really stop and sit back about the macro of that, that I haven't slept well for 30 some years. And you wind up just spending a lot of energy and a lot of time doing things that are not really actually ultimately towards the goal of where you want to go in your life, but also just the day-to-day process of your life. It makes it very difficult to be at rest or at peace.
Yes. As a perfectionist, not as bad, but I just always felt like nothing was ever good enough. And once I reached a peak, there was always another peak right after it. Once I was in the ideal job, I would be like, where's my next job? You know, and I also had the sense that I want to ask you, do you have that thing where if you don't know, you can never say, I don't know?
No, I don't have that. There's two. That's a good question. I don't have. Fortunately, I'm a Pisces enough and an artist enough and sensitive enough that I don't have that issue. There are some male traits that I don't carry that way. Like I don't have a problem with asking directions. Some of those jokes about our gender. it's never been about those things. It's always been about trying to do in my life or something that's expected of me. And so it took like little things that started to occur was I simply finally got to the place in my life where I didn't have time to fix my own car, even though I knew how. So life sort of forced me to break away from some of these things. I finally woke up one day and realized it's okay to actually pay someone to clean your house. Like these are things that where I was supposed to do everything and have to know everything. The Excel software was one of the things that these are silly, but these are things that helped break me of this was I was like, I am not learning this damn program. I have learned enough crap in my life. Excel's great. I am not learning it. And I'll find somebody else who knows how to use it. I'm not doing it. So, but it's been a very slow process over the course of the last couple of decades. And sometimes through relationships and breakups and burying people, you know, life is short. It's not a matter of just making things simple, but the bottom line is you don't have to be an expert and you don't have to know everything. So the irony is I have no problem saying what I don't know.
Well, good for you. I had to work on that one for me, but let's go back. I do want to hit so your mom and other moments growing up that you knew you had this like thing that was weighing on your shoulders, this secret of like, even if you didn't have the words for it, that you were a perfectionist.
Yeah, it was the same. It was the same for my sister. Again, it just comes from criticism. Being applauded or being patted on the back. I've admired and been so overwhelmed with some of the people in my life that I've met when I've met their parents and realized what kind of upbringing. I've said more than once, I have no idea what that looks like in my household, because basically the only thing that really existed in my household beyond the age of 10 was just what we did wrong. And what wasn't good enough and what wasn't right. My sister has the same issue. We have very different personalities, Brianne, but same problem. She was 2.5 years older. She was in charge of the house. I mean, basically between 12 and 10 years old, we kind of raised ourselves. And my sister would do all the stuff she thought she was supposed to do. And when my mother got home, she would just criticize it all. And so all you're doing, and my mother was very successful. My mother was a country singer and had perfect pitch and was a talented person and all that. And so you never managed it. My sister even made the statement when she goes, our mother didn't have kids to have kids. She had kids to have soldiers to work for her. So that, you know, again, I want to be careful because I'm not saying this to you because of a violin. This is just something that you don't, the reason why it was a secret for me is because I was not conscious of it for a long, long time as to how severe it was and what it was doing to me.
No, I get it. My mother was a workaholic and her job was the most important. And she said she had this moment later in life where she said, I didn't know how to be a mother. When I had a kid, I didn't know how to be a mother. And it made me understand why I did the things I did, because I didn't have a mother that knew how to be a mother.
My mom is 80 years old. I wish she would have ever had that much humility. My mother thinks did a great job and was perfect. And we all kind of go to the place where she did the best she could. That's the macro of what you do. But if you interviewed her mom, she would tell you all the stories about how brilliant she was.
Yeah, that has to be kind of heartbreaking a little bit. Because I have to tell you, the moment my mother said that to me, all the resentment, all the anger, everything I was carrying kind of just lifted. You just really want your parents to be like, I did the best I can. I wasn't great. Just acknowledgement. So I can't imagine not having that acknowledgement because it's healed me so much.
No, never had that, nor has my sister. I mean, my mother she is simply not capable of it. That's why my mother has a certain, she would, if you talk to her, you think she would very sweet and all that. And I'm not saying she isn't, but she, when it comes to any form of her being wrong or off, she will never let that down. She would never, ever admit to having made any mistake like that ever.
So how, what was the moment when you hit your bottom and you realized you were holding this perfectionist secret from yourself and the world?
One of the things that was one of the key things was when the first friend that I made in Los Angeles happened to be a day apart from me. We were both Pisces, and he died very early at 41 years old. And I was carrying his casket and in 2003. And I remember it was surreal to me because I could not believe that he was gone. And that was in between, that moment happened in between the first woman that I fell in love with and then the second woman that I fell in love with, neither of whom I'm with anymore. Clearly the first and the second I'm not. And again, you start to get into a certain age and all of a sudden people of a certain age really start passing a lot. And then you start looking at your mortality and I'm the kind of guy, I'm a hard worker, and I'm the kind of person who would then go, okay, you have to actively do something about this right now. Actively do something. And over the course of the next decade, I worked very hard at it, and I'm still hard on myself. This is no different than being an addict or being, the first thing you say is, hi, my name's Bill W. and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, my name's Kevin, and I have a perfectionism complex. It's just a matter of whether or not you can find a way in your life to be metaphorically clean and sober. Mm. And I think on some levels, Brianne, I will always be working for that because I don't hear applause. I don't hear compliments. None of those things. Sam, I'd be careful. I'll start crying.
It's okay.
It's been a long life trying to find a way to have that stuff sink in.
When you say it's like an addiction of the mind, that's what it sounds like to me. Like
Absolutely. You,
the voices inside your head never give you peace and serenity.
Correct.
Yeah. And I feel like most addicts that put something on top of it are usually perfectionists or fear of abandonment or,
Right.
They carry that same thing inside of them where that voice just tells you you're never good enough.
Oh, I would have had every propensity in my life that if I had gone down the road of any form of those addictions, I probably wouldn't be sitting here today. I don't have those issues, but I've obviously known a ton of people who do. And if I had gone down that road, I'm probably pretty sure I probably wouldn't have survived it.
But you did say you were a very hard worker. Do you think you put work, like, could you be a workaholic on top of the perfectionist? Because usually something's on top of it.
Times a thousand.
Okay.
Ask your husband when he met me. Because of how he met me and what I was doing at the time and the organization that I founded and created. Yeah, I worked 85 hours a week and I don't sleep. And so, yes, that was a given. It was one of the ways that it came out was that. But also being very creative, I have a zillion ideas and it's being able to find a way to, you can't make all of them happen at once perfectly. You can't write 1,000 books at once. You can't, I was a stand-up comic. I was an improv artist. I did all those things along with having a long television career. But nonetheless, again, still in ways, and you know this well, Brianne, a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
So that's the result of it.
So your friend died and then you made this change. How did you make that change? How did you step into this? Okay. Something in my life needs to shift.
The first thing that I had to do was I had to pick out the moments in life when I finally started asking for help. And I'm talking about, again, that's why I made the Excel spreadsheet joke, because you talk about something that's as deep and as heavy as this, and you bring it down to a piece of software. It's like, yeah, that's literally like putting the beer down, putting the drink down. But it's like, no, I am not going to spend an ounce of my life's time learning this damn software. I will get somebody else to do it for me. It's asking for help. For me, that's what it was. I had to start saying no to the things that I had either the skill set or the ability to learn and do and go, no, this is something that my time is not more valuable, but my time is better spent on the things I'm trying to accomplish.
And how was saying no, or how was picking up that first call and saying, I need help. Can you do this for me? What was that moment inside?
Brutally difficult. And unfortunately, on top of that, Brianne, I did actually accept some help in one scenario in my life. And to this day, it is one of the regrets in life that I have, because had I not asked for the help and accepted the help, I wouldn't have lost $1.3 million. And so that kind of crosses the thing of like, see, I went and asked somebody for help, and it made me make a poor decision that if I hadn't looked for his help, I would never have made that choice and that investment, and I wouldn't have lost that money. So it makes you say to yourself, see, you shouldn't be asking for help. But even though that was a bad mistake on my part, I have not let that keep me from continuing down the journey of when it makes sense, I need somebody else to do this for me. I need to not go do this myself.
That has to be so hard, though, if you feel like that was a mistake and then having to retrain your brain and go, no, that was God's plan. That was meant to happen. I still have to be saying no. I still have to be asking for help.
Yeah, because I did. And exactly to your point, what I did do was I said, now, how could you have altered even getting yourself in this situation? And the answer was, Kevin, you're smart enough and you could have done a little bit more research and you wouldn't have asked for help. You would have just skipped the entire subject. And so that's taking responsibility for something without putting, because this was not a perfectionism scenario. This was a choice in life. This was a decision. And if I'd done a little bit more research, I probably would have not even gone down the road of putting myself in the position of asking for help. But I mostly do it, Brianne, honestly, every day now. I do it in all sorts of small ways. I try not to overtax my day. I try not to put too many things on my to-do list. I work very hard to look at my day now and go, you know what? You got a lot done. Find a way to just be okay with that and just stop working, sit down and relax. I mean, that's
do you have a time where you turn off your electronics? Are you trying to do that?
No, I do it more by my soul and by my energy. Is I've always managed to just get to the place where I'm tired, but I keep going, and now I don't. Now I go for a hike, or I go walk around. In these situations, I go walk around the neighborhood. I just stop, and I couldn't do that for 3 decades.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's hit those deadly seven sins. I know you have a book about them for actors, which is hilarious.
It is hilarious.
When you sent it to me, I was like, oh, that's so funny. So I like to look at them, and not in the religious sense, which you do too. We talked about, I like to look at them as the character defects that all humans have. So which of these are connected to your secret of perfectionism? We have pride, greed, lust, gluttony, envy, anger, and sloth.
Well, it's easy for us to say that all of them do, but I can easily set aside sloth because I've never been that. And I will set aside lust, even though I'm a guy, just in the sense that perfectionism doesn't apply to that as much. But I certainly think the three that have been the most dangerous for me are easily envy, wrath, and pride, because it's the pride of being perfect. It's the self-anger at not. And it's also always looking to someone else. And again, in multiple areas, not just one. It's not like, oh, that actor, or oh, this. It's in every single thing I've touched in my life, looking at somebody else and going, see, that person's there. And that, I mean, it's like literally picking out, 12 professions and going, see, I'm not in the top 1% in 12 different careers at the same time.
I have that too. I call it the compare and despair. Like it just eats me up. I had to get off social media for the longest time, for a year, because I was always, no matter what I was doing and how great my life was, as soon as I got on social media, I just got in a bad mood because somebody's filter looked so pretty on their life. And I was like, oh, we don't have that, and it's like this terrible thing that we do to ourselves. So I get that.
Yes. So that those three, I mean, certainly, yes, I have been gluttonous about trying to do too much. Certainly, I have been greedy about trying to be too perfect. And I have lusted for perfectionism. But certainly in my case, in terms of what I recognized it was doing to me as a human being, pride certainly is the biggest one. But wrath and envy. Because I was a comic and I'm funny, but I also, people who know me, they call me intense, and people that know me call me edgy. And that's where some of that, just ask your husband. And so that's where some of that plays out through the perfectionism complex.
So who do you think this secret helped, and who do you think it harmed?
You mean in my outside world, besides harming myself Well, I certainly think it helped. I think it certainly my perfectionism complex helped your husband. My workaholic aspect for what he was a part of certainly helped make that entity what it was. And certainly in some ways, I'm sure it probably has harmed more. It's hard to say my relationships, because I was very careful about the type of people that I would naturally fall in love with. They were tough, strong ladies. So I can't say that it harmed that, but I will say this, and maybe this is what I should say. You know what it harmed? Wow. I know I knew this, but I didn't realize this was going to come out, Brianne. You know what it harmed? It kept me from being a father. I was afraid I'd fail.
Yeah, I didn't want to be a mother because I had that feeling too. Like I wasn't built to be a mother.
I was afraid I would make another person like me. So I didn't become a father. I do have a relationship with the kid that I call my pseudo stepson, would be my last relationship son. So I'm not his natural father or is technically his stepfather, but I raised him from 6 to 14. And when we broke up, he chose to stay in touch. He's 20 now. He's almost 21. And he chose to continue a relationship with me. But what it did to me in my late 20s was it kept me from choosing to be a father.
Wow.
So that's what it probably hurt the most.
I'm like about to cry. I'm sorry. Usually I'm hold it together. But to like look at that and realize, wow, a whole part of your life went unlived because of this perfectionism.
Yep.
So how do you move forward in the future?
Well, I've moved every single day. I mean, from the time that I, again, a lot of references to Mark. I mean, he knows me well. I played third base in baseball. I mean, I'm not going to back down from something that's difficult. And so that's why I use the addiction reference, because 12-step program applies to a lot of things. And while I don't need a sponsor for this, you know, the little guy pops up on your shoulder and that's my sponsor to constantly remind. I'm good at it now. I'm good at catching myself at the point of like, oh, nope. That's it. Just stop right here. That's far enough. We're done. Or, whoop, nope. Mm-mm. Don't do that if you're not going to get somebody to assist you doing that. But it doesn't go away. You know, it's almost like it's just metaphorically almost like reaching for the bottle or reaching for whatever. Like I still have to slap my own hand. Probably 10, depending on the day, probably 10 to 50 times a day.
Wow.
I have to stop myself from, and we're just talking about saving small increments of time, Brianne. We're not talking about, you know, huge life decisions. I'm just saying to be happier, to have more inner peace, to take the time to go take a hike. We're talking about simple stuff, but
yeah, but that sometimes that simple stuff is the hardest thing to switch. Like
100%.
Put the computer down and walk outside. Like sometimes you're like, I just want to finish it. I just want to get this done. And it's like, no, you're at the point. Walk away. Go enjoy your life. The life is not on the computer screen.
Yeah. Or whatever it may be. And so for me, I have been working on it for so long. Like I said, conscious of this for a little over a couple of decades now, going back to 30-ish. And the bottom line is that it's just one of those things now where it has become the challenge is probably not ever going to completely go away. So the habit of now catching myself and staying aware of myself, and being good to myself or more kind to myself, that has become a habit. And so I catch myself faster.
Mm. And one last question before we go, what would you tell someone, especially a younger, let's say in their early 20s, what would you tell yourself or somebody else that has this behavior, has this perfectionism?
It doesn't have to be a love interest, but try to find, and I wouldn't say a lot, I don't want to make it generic, either find the one sibling if it exists, and or find one or two friends that in a very, very healthy way can always remind you how terrific you are. And also in a healthy way, not just a pandering way. And also that they are there to make sure that they remind you, you don't have to be perfect to be outstanding.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing your secret and your story today.
You're very welcome.
And if you want to be on the show, please email me at secretlifepodcast@icloud.com. Until next time. Thanks again for listening to the show. Please subscribe, rate, share, or send me a note at secretlifepodcast.com. And if you'd like to check out my book, head over to secretlifenovel.com or Amazon to pick up a copy for yourself or someone you love. Thanks again. See you soon.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.